Cheers, and welcome to the next episode of the Beach Corp podcast. We're back on American soil. My accent is horrible, and it's back to normal as well. But yeah, we're back. Finally catching up with some sleep. I know Max, you just got back yesterday. We had a great time in London in the European International Championships, where Clef showed its power and donked Natalie twice in finals, where Ryuki Okada took it down with Clough Terapagos or Badou Terapagos, whatever they want to call it these days. And now that Miller fell just short in finals. But yeah, we got that. We'll talk about the results. Max, now I'll give you a breakdown of what we played in the tournament. Surprise, we didn't change a card. We told you that on the episode last week that was probably going to happen, and it did. And you know, we both had got championship points, so we'll talk about our run and what happened. And then we have a special guest this week, Xander Perreault. Top four finisher with Goldango, the cheesehead. All you cheesehead lovers, make sure you stay tuned for his interview about his thoughts on the meta and the results of the European National Championships and talk everything Goldango. And we're also going to have the return of trivia. We didn't have a trivia last week because Maddox wasn't here, but I'll try and stump the boys. I have a feeling that Maddox is going to get this one correct this
Oh.
week. And we have Crispin's Corner back. One of our favorite subjects we like to do after tournaments. And then last but not least, of course, I've been deep diving into the data. So I'll give you my updates after the International Championship of what I think is going on for the World Championship data, because apparently I need some help. So that's going to be all of our topics today. But Parker, what did you do this weekend? Did you have a good week after our episode last week?
I did, yeah. This Saturday, I went to see, or I took Alexa to see her kid, and she actually ended up staying there. I'd actually just picked her up today. So she had
You
a
were
great
free man
time.
all weekend?
I
Hey,
was, but except I
yo.
had to work.
Oh,
Had to work, so
man.
that sucked. But yeah, I was for a moment. But
All right.
yeah, we're all back now.
Waking
Back
up
to
early to
normal.
tune into the EYC, I'm sure.
Yeah, not exactly,
It's
but
like, have you heard of sleep though?
yeah, I mean, like the finals, I saw game one and then game two, like he took knockout on the Badou with his Badou with the poison, and like Natalie promoted Rotom, and I just turned it off. But I guess she won game two,
Game
but
two was such a good game.
that sucks.
Yeah.
Turned it
Yeah.
off.
Unfortunately, you can tell how the set went by just looking at the YouTube video, which is already up, which, like, the whole series was done in like 28 minutes.
Is that how long it was? That's
Yeah,
crazy.
and like 25 minutes of that was game two. So, but yeah, I mean, so cool to see. Shout out to Natalie. I mean, I was able to be on the venue on Sunday, and I was in the area where Natalie and Brent Tonneson, like James Cox, and a lot of folks were like practicing the matchups. They had a lot of runs with the matchup. And actually, like in their testing, it was like pretty 50-50 in terms of like how those games were going. But I think only like one or two of them was a donk, and they played probably like 12 games. So I think by the end they were like, you know, seven and or it was like 13 games, or like 7 and 6 or like 6 and 6. It was like a pretty dead even series. I think a few more donks than anyone was looking for in finals, but it really do be like that sometimes. It was
Yeah, I mean, when's the last time you've had, hey, our international championship won the finals without attacking? Or I mean, at least like game one, like he actually attacked to get the win, you know? But like game three, like didn't attack. It's kind of wild, honestly. Like, I don't know the last time I don't recall a time. Parker, do you recall a time where you've seen the result of a tournament be not attacking?
Yes, when
Whaler
Waylord,
EX, yeah.
yeah,
How long ago was that?
it's 2015, I think.
From 10 years ago?
Yeah.
That's a long time. Yeah, I'm ready for this deck to rotate, you know, but I think all the Klefkies will come out in full force in Vancouver, and we'll see what happens then. Maddox, you're back on the ground. How you feeling? You rested yet?
Yeah, feeling good. I just got back from London last night. You know, tried to stay awake as long just stayed awake on the flight, so now you just like get back to the Florida and just hit the pillow. Had to get back to work today, so was very much adjusting that, but honestly, I had a fantastic time in London. Mostly caught up on sleep, I think. We'll be, you know, tackling a little bit more of my health and well-being stuff for the next month while I'm not traveling to three events in a row. But yeah, good to be back. Had a great time in London. I always enjoy being there. It's so great to see so many of y'all and just hang out and enjoy the good food. And honestly, I've come to enjoy the full English breakfast and even some beans on toast on occasion. So controversial take, I know, but you know, hey, I mean, just give it a shot, y'all.
You know, I'm not, it's not for me, but the night that you and the gang went to Fogo de Chão again, the second time on an international trip that you guys have gone to Fogo de Chão. Again,
to be fair, I've never been to Fogo de Chão before.
To be
and
fair,
all the times y'all went in Brazil, I was never there. So that's this is fair. My first time to Fogo de Chão.
I have never been to Fogo de Chão outside of my country. But anyways, some of our friends like to go to Fogo de Chão, and I'm like, bro, I'm going to go get fish and chips at the boat. Like, did you know there's a restaurant like right next to the venue, like on a yacht?
Is it?
Yeah, it's a hotel.
Well, Sunday night, I stayed at the hotel on the other boat next to the Sanders.
Oh, really?
The good hotel, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It was cheap, and basically Monday morning, it was just a bunch of Pokemon folks, you know, checking out, everyone repacking their suitcase with all their Pokemon Center bags in the lobby and stuff. And it's like, I did the same thing, so.
Yeah, I got my Pokemon Center hat on, my Psyduck hat.
This shirt was available at the venue that I'm wearing now, but I bought it last year, so I'm just wearing it. I'm still wearing it, so.
Anyways, let's talk about the results. We led off with Ryoko Okada, you know, taking it down with Badoo Terapagos. I don't think anyone's surprised about this result, but he was able to beat Dragapult in the finals. The rest of the top eight stood as Xander Perreault in third with Goldengo, Simone Fioto with Archaldon Dialga. There was a Dialga variant in top four. And then Vinicius Fernandez with Dragapult at fifth. Daniel Magda with Snorlax Stall in sixth. Rowan Nielsen in seventh with Snorlax Stall. And James Cox rounding out our top eight with Dragapult Dusknoir. And just on the outside, Oscar Madsen with Dragapult Charizard in ninth. A deck I've been kind of talking up a little bit, so it's nice to see it get a good finish. What stands out to you about the results? Is there anything surprising? What do you have to say about this?
I'm a little bit surprised Cloth won. Like, obviously, it's a great deck, but, like, I really thought all the, like, I don't know, all the, like, Clef Keys and all that stuff would get in the way, but I guess not. He was able to power through it all, and then, the deck's just super solid from there. I see it has the Japan special, the one Monkey Dory, and the one Dark Energy.
There's so many decks that have like one Monkey Dory that are in top eight.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the big takeaway is just the decks that we're not seeing, right? Gardevoir being this super strong deck that's always been prevalent. And of course, Maridon won the last two major events, always had multiple showings in the top eight. Not even a single Maridon or Gardevoir in the top 16. I think that's the biggest shock to me personally. I don't know. Definitely folks were ready for Maridon. You know, even the Cloth and the Maridon matchup is still pretty close, honestly.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a two prize race. Obviously, some decks like Snorlax Stall that come in give decks like Maridon a little bit of a harder time. So, I think at least one of the Snorlax lists was playing the melodic from Twilight Masquerade. He had to stop with the mentally calm ability to stop primarily Professor Turo's scenario from picking up your liability in the Gardevoir matchup. So,
well, I wonder if it beats the Archaldon matchup too.
They mentioned Ninja maybe, but or get fluted out or something. But
yeah, I think there's enough. I mean, you would think there's enough ways to just like with boss and KO the melodic before it's a problem. Like you have to force it to stay in the field, plus just a lot of, I'm gonna play like two Turos and like a Cyclone plus Palpad naturally plus your basic can attack efficiently. Like I think it's kind of tricky.
Yeah, I was interested to see that. Another interesting topic is that you have to go further than Regidrago to see a Gardevoir or a Maridon deck in the results. Regidrago deck 17th place. Thomas Lani played two Canceling Cologne in their list, and the other Regidrago that was right below it, not too far, played a Lost City in their list. So pretty interesting takes on, you know, where Regidrago's going. Obviously, we know it's still a good deck. What are your takes on Regidrago finishing so high? We have two in top 32.
I mean, you called it last time, actually. You were like, the Rogue deck Regidrago V-Star could be actually a really good play here. And I guess they're proving it. Like, You know, and this definitely seems good. You hit the E switch before the Budu comes out. I mean, like, what's Budu doing? Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to talk about predictions in a minute, but I mean, let's just hit on it just real quick. Parker, you and I hit it out of the park with our rogue deck predictions.
He did.
Parker picked Goldango as a ro best rogue play, and I picked Regidrago, and both of those decks showed up and did well.
But now y'all picked Kloth. If I was on the pot, I would have picked Kloth.
Cloth is not
I
a
think
rogue
I
deck.
put.
I
I
would not
think
have
I
picked
put.
Cloth.
I think I
I would
put
call Cloth like a
Kloth
rogue
as.
deck. No, it's not rogue. It's
What
meta.
finishes did it have?
So we kind of defined rogue as like not top six.
Yeah, I think I had it as number six or something.
Yeah.
And Kloth had the top four in Merida, and that's it.
Don't think it's rogue. I mean, it's a well-known deck. People are playing it. People have been playing it.
I'm
Like Gold, but
playing
like
it.
Goldango is a well-known. I don't know, but
Anyways, we're
anyways,
anyways.
but to be fair, calling out Goldango specifically, I think that's a big surprise deck. Super pumped to talk to Xander later, and
Yeah.
like let y'all hear about how their group got to Goldango, and honestly, a fantastic call and the way they built their list. Really took care of Dragapult. But we'll talk more of Xander about that a little later.
Yeah. I mean, so those are our top kind of like top results here. Anything else stood out to you that you want to call out before we kind of dive deep and see if any interesting decks are in day two?
I'm a little intrigued, I guess, that the fourth place Archaladon deck played the Dialga and also played Scoop Up Cyclone and not Scramble Switch. So I'm just like, how is he ever getting this attack off? Because like when I play it, I get the attack off like one every 10 games maybe, and that's with Scramble Switch in the deck. But like I don't know. Like if it works, it works.
To
I've
be
seen a
fair, with
lot
Scoop
of,
Up, yeah. Like with Scoop Up Skyclone, it does make it easier to pull it off as well. You could, like,
Did he play
double.
Thornton?
Yeah, he played a Thornton.
Yeah,
Yeah, didn't
there
like.
was a trend of a lot of Archaladon lists cutting the Dialga and then opting for like more
Right.
consistency or playing like Black Belt, trading other cards like that to increase your damage. So, I too wasn't really expecting to see Archaladon lists with Dialga in final. I'm sorry, not in finals, but in top four. But props to Simona on an awesome run. I think the other call out is Grant Manley with, again, tied Oscar Madsen and Natural End the winning end to top eight. But
Wow.
with a top 16 with Lost Box. And there's been a lot of chatter on
I've
Twitter
got a
about how
lot of
bad this
chatter.
list is, or about how good this list is, or about, wow, good players can really play a bad list well. But a couple of key of the standouts here, right? No Pokestops, instead opting for two copies of Artisan. Played a Crispin, played a Roxanne. No, actually, no. It did play the Sableye, but two Jet Energies. Really, really a teched out list. I think preparing for item lock and trying to operate under item lock. Some really cool tools. Being able to use Crispin to power up that Greninja under item lock and like a Jet Energy. Right, there's a bunch of cool possibilities. To switch and move around item lock. Some of the
Yeah,
people,
I.
some other players online weren't very complimentary of this list, but saw some cool innovations from Turbo Lost Box. A decent play that had some good success. Also saw some Lost Box running out of the Joltik that you could attack with.
I did
put
not see that. Is there one on day two?
the 30 HP Joltik from, I forget which set that's from, but it's the one
It's
that
from
it's the,
Stellar.
yeah, Stellar Crown, yeah. So 30, yeah, so again, just 30 HP, but for one colorless, search your deck for two lightning and two grass energy, attach them to your Pokemon any way you like. If you're able to get that in the first turn of the game, you can, go switch card into a Joltik. Attach an energy, bench your Iron Hands and accelerate four energy onto that Iron Hand. So kind of cooking. Some neat innovations here. And again, I know we only have a little bit of time left of this format, but even the decks that are about to rotate,
That's
like
pretty
Lost
good.
Box,
Yeah, I
that
mean,
have been around for so
honestly,
long, excited to see how they continue to innovate with these last few weeks of the format.
that's pretty solid. Plays the Gigas also, so you
Yeah.
just put it on the Gigas. That's pretty. Oh, it's lightning. Oh, yeah, eight Pokemon. That's pretty good, dude.
No.
It's like a fifth gate, honestly.
It's a double gate that
It's
you
a
can use on your
turn one
first
double
turn.
gate, yeah.
That's crazy, dude. I went two in Lost Zone. Yeah, my Iron Hands is ready to go. Your turn, bud.
Exactly.
I mean,
I mean, or
that's
you play
kind
the
of.
Pikachu, right? You could go put, I
Yeah.
mean, you could go
That's
put
playing
Lightning Grass on
Pikachu.
Pikachu and then
Yeah.
like Lightning Grass on Blood Moon Urzaluna or like something like that, right? Like
That's kind of
I mean
crazy.
there's some definitely some nutty combos you can pull off with this,
Actually,
so.
I'm sending it. I'm just kidding. The two Lost Walks I played against, bro, they felt so free.
Oh no, I know we'll talk about our runs shortly, but like the Lost Box that I played, I'd always kind of given I never actually played the Maridon to Lost Box matchup these days. And I kind of always clowning anyone who says, oh, well, Maridon should be fine in the Lost Box. You just amp. And I played the matchup, and it did not go that great. So I'll tell you all about that later.
Yeah. So let's talk about our runs real quick. Let's spend like 5 minutes each. I'll go first. Again, we played the same 60 that we played to Merida, and you played to Puerto Rico for a top four finish.
Top eight
finish. I was like, wait a minute, huh? So started off against Troutdon, was able to pull it out, 2-0, game one, or round one. Lost, hit a Raging Bolt, so I felt like Maddox. I'm like, crap, here we go, I'm hitting all the Raging Bolts. Sadly for me, my round two opponent, her husband is a Maridon enjoyer, and so she had like 100-plus games against Maridon, and she played it so, so well. Like, her bench was always like three or under, and I'm like, bro, how am I supposed to win this? And she's got like three charms, and it's on everything, and I'm like, oh my god, bro, like, this is so frustrating.
Cooked you for sure.
So, I lost the flip. I lost the first game. I won the second game, and it came down to where I needed to like have boss. I had the prize lead in game three because she missed the turn one attack. I needed to boss this turn, and I needed to have like something else for next turn. So I had Ultra Ball for Fish to get boss, but I decided to rip the Pokestop because I had, like, everything in my hand was, like, the combo that I needed to win next turn. So I knew the last boss in my deck just got Eye Under the Bottom, so I knew it was safe. But what I didn't think about in the moment was the Lumineon wasn't safe, and I got punished for it, and I hit the Lumineon with the Pokestop because I didn't want to shuffle the deck, and I didn't want Ultra Ball anyway, so... did hit an item card, which would have been great. So if I hit any item that's and then don't hit fish, I probably win that game. End up losing it. I beat a Turbo Lost Box round three after some terrible service delays as far as the Wi-Fi. That was terrible, by the way. I beat a Cerulege round four. Round five, beat a Turbo Lost Box. So I'm feeling pretty good. I'm 4-1. My only loss has been like, you know, kind of like a 50-50 decision that I probably... still would have done, even if I had thought about the Lumineon. Just because, like, the odds... My deck was, like, 20 cards. The odds of me hitting it are pretty low. So I hit Zach Lesage on Archaladon round six. I opened going second. I think he won the flip and wanted to go first. I'm like, that's fine. We have a plan, right? Opened Magnemite, Fez, pass. So, and then I kind of got out of it a little bit, like, turn two. But I didn't realize Jamming Tower was in play, but after I KO'd my Fez, it was, like, game over anyways, I felt like. So I was just kind of flustered already, making a bad play. And then game two, I got a slow start. I missed attack. And then I end up KO'ing this guy with Raichu. And then if he doesn't have boss that turn, I have a chance to, like, do okay. But he has boss that turn. And so I'm just going to lose from there. Round seven, hit Clefairy, got donked game one. Game two, it didn't attack. And then, so that was kind of like from 4-1 to 4-3 pretty quick. And, you know, and it felt really bad just because, you know, I definitely wasn't playing my best on the day. You know, we're looking back at it. But I was playing good enough to do well. And then... I immediately got punished for not playing good and losing two and hit a Snorlax stall and opened Latios game one. And then game two opens Zapdos. So I didn't attack like round seven or round eight, which was like pretty horrible.
No.
And then round nine, I beat a Gardevoir to get some pity points. Got top 1,024, so 40 points are on the board. And, you know, now I'm at my best finish limit. That's five. So at least I kind of know where I stand and can keep monitoring it, but I'm hoping to replace it here in Vancouver or Atlanta. So yeah, I finished 5-4. Yeah, 5-4.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I the deck is good. I mean, we have so many people on the list this week. They're like, yeah, this deck's cracked. And that is Zach Cohen made day two with the list. I think he was like one card off, like non-optimal
Magnemite. He just didn't have the Magnemite. The amount of people that I had that were reaching out to me and says, hey, I like your list. Do you have more of the 50 HP Magnemites? Yeah. And I was like, I do not. So.
I mean, like, we literally like got those on the day to Merida.
On the way to Merida, yeah.
Once we decided that was optimal Magnemite. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's my run. Nothing special, but top 1,000, got some championship points. You know, really disappointed to not not bring home but 64 or better at either IC this season, because I'm probably going to be missing any IC due to my baby coming. So that's a blessing, yes. But it will suck to kind of, you know, miss New Orleans. Had a great time last season. But we'll see what we can do in Atlanta, and we'll talk about championship points later. I'll dive into that more.
Yeah.
Max, what about you? What happened with your run?
Yeah, so for me, I was lucky enough to have, you know, third day two in a row, just in 3 weeks type of thing. So just been playing again the same Orion 60 that I played to Merida in Puerto Rico. Things went well there. Definitely thought my luck was turning around at the start. I started 0-2. My first round opponent, I played against Luke from the UK. Super nice guy. He said, I was like, oh, hey, you just got top eight at Puerto Rico, right? I was like, oh, yeah. Thank, you know. And he was playing Maridon, you know, lost the flip, kind of got behind and was just never able to really catch up from there. Round two, hit a Raging Bolt. My Raging Bolt luck ran out that I had in Puerto Rico, where I had to play three in out of eight rounds in day one and beat all three of them. Did not do well here. Anyone who doesn't know, the optimal Magnemite second attack is called Speedball. I used that in the matchup, but that was about it. I really didn't have a chance to set up. So I was 0-2, not feeling great, but knowing that I mean, still playing well and had some potential to come back. So
when I saw you say Speedball, like at one point in one of our chats, I was like, are you like, because I knew you were 0-2s. Like in my head, I'm like, are you in the back playing like a side event or something? I didn't know.
No, that was in the match. That was like, I opened Zapdos to get to Magnemite, and I'm like, okay, well, attached to the Magnemite, I guess, to like single magnetic charge if I draw like research or something. And then I was like, and then later I was like, okay, well, I want to keep a single prize in the act. I'm like, well, if I hit the Raging Bolt for 20, then that sets up for Photon Blaster later. So like, playing to all my outs, and surprised there were none. But got up to George Camp. But anyways, from there again, 0-2 starts rough. I've had them a few times before. I mean, this is the first time I made like day two from an 0-2 start, so I had to, you know, it's fortunate enough to win six in a row and have things go my way kind of along the way. Hit a Guardy round three, double switch cart, was able to help me win the game there, which was good and felt refreshing. Hit a super cool Maridon player round four. He played all four of his generators in turn one, but he didn't have great generator luck, and I don't think it was correct for him to do that, but it was so fun anyways. Great guy. I was able to get that game in the mirror. Oh, yeah, I hit a round five, I hit a Charizard. I'm like, all right, surely my run is over now, right? So, like, game one, I was just able to go, like, 2-2-2 somehow. And in game two, I'm super behind. He pulled off, like, you know, he pulled off, like, the stamp play after I had to take a single prize, but he didn't get the Defiance Band, or maybe he didn't play it or something. So he just hit my like, Iron Hands for, like, 2/10. I'm like, okay, maybe I have a chance. So I go, like, Arm Press, whatever it was. I ended up down at, like, actually, I think I went like Boss Fish for whatever it was. I was down to like two prizes left, and he had two prizes left. I was like, all right, all he needs is, I know he has Thorin in hand. He just needs Rod, Rare Candy, Zard. And I'm pretty sure he has like 11 card hand, flips the script for three. He has Pidgeot. He checks his deck. He's like, you got it. I'm like, I don't know what he was missing. I literally just like went for that last play. I was like, okay, maybe he just doesn't have it. And he just didn't have it. So definitely feel like I got away with one there. But we'll take those again. Sometimes you kind of need the things to go right on the run, I think. In Archaladon, close set there. He didn't draw very well in game three, so a little salty at the end. But, you know, Maridon's just a deck that will capitalize on any slow start, so was able to do that with, like, a early amp. Hit another Gardevoir. I priced three generators in one of the games, but I still won because I had double turbo and the other generator in my opening hand. So, again, I view a lot of these runs as, like, you know, you need to be playing well, but then sometimes I need a few things to go to my way. It's like, hit a Charizard, you know, stole a game where, you know, probably didn't really make sense for me to win, and that being the difference right there. And then hit a Cloth Terapagos at round eight and was able to win that one in a very close set. But, you know, was playing very well there. So, and then hit a buddy of mine, Jarek Kumila. Shout out to him. We've had him on the pod before a long, long time ago. He's chasing his invite as well. So we settled for the ID to give us both a chance to earn some more points the next day. But yeah, clawback from 0-2 to 6-2-1, so felt good about that. You know, woke up hungry on Saturday for more, but I think day two wasn't destined to go my way. I've had a couple of good day twos the past few weeks, so I was happy with, you know, how, you know, I went for none. It says, hey, I had a great couple of weeks. If things don't go my way this week, that's fine too. I hit Benjamin Herbert, great player, just aged up from seniors. Was playing Gardevoir. And, you know, played the Klefki, played things well. There was, you know, even a game where I got, like, early aggression. I think I amped, like, once throughout the set. He played it very well. I also had a little bit poor draws at the start too, but you know, it happens. I was like, all right, not meant to be. Actually hit Caleb Gettimer, you know, friend blame right on. You know, his prep was all very like determined on, you know, going first in the mirror, but they opted to not play the Pikachu this time. So we did play the Pikachu in mine. He went first every game of the two games we played, and I got the turn two knockout or turn one knockout, and he's just kind of never able to catch up from there. So unfortunate to hit an American and knock him out of, you know, prizing that day, but you know, you gotta do what we gotta do.
Yeah, I saw the tweet. It was like, yeah, Caleb's already on his way home. They already booked a flight.
Yeah, literally as I sit down, right, because we were both 6-3-1, so we both know, like, you know, probably out for money, and again, Caleb has his invite already. He won a regional already this season, so yeah. He's chilling. You know, he was saying, hey, yeah, you know, I'm gonna, you know, and he knew I was playing Maridon. You know, I bought his guide from him for donating to the cause that he likes. So, I mean, you know, I mean, Caleb's a great guy. But, you know, he was kind of saying, like, hey, honestly, if I don't win this one, I'm probably just, you know, my flight's true tomorrow, but if I don't win this, I'm probably just going to go see if I can move it early and fly home today. So, game one we play, his only line is, like, if I need to miss attack, and I have to use Magneton, but I'm able to avoid that. And in game two, he goes first, I get the turn two attack, and he's just like, hey, you're good, I'm going to head home. So, I think a little dejected from the day, but shout out Caleb, an incredible player. And now round 12, hit the fateful loss box I mentioned just a little bit ago. Again, I never played this matchup in this format with like the new loss boxes, but I was like, oh, this should be fine. I just go turn one amp, and then, you know, and they have to get to turn two response, and that's gonna be so hard for them, right? It was not hard for them. I missed turn one amp both game. I missed turn one amp at the first game, and then they go turn two, Pikachu KO my active, and I'm like, I can't KO this Pikachu. You have Blood Moon on the bench and you're trying to power up. I have to go like boss amp. But at that point, I'm just like too far behind. There's really not any way to recover. I don't play any disruption. They can just kind of, you know, do whatever they want. I'm like at the end, I'm like, okay, maybe their last gate's prize. And it wasn't prized. So I was like, all right. So then I was thinking about it more. So then game two, I says, okay, well, I probably just need to guarantee like a turn, like the first attack. So I choose to go first, actually, just to say, hey, I have another chance to, you know, play, you know, to see a few more cards in my deck to get another energy attachment. So I do that. And I am able to get the Iron Hands amp for two to take the first knockout, but you know, they're able to go and set up a strong board, set up Pikachu, and have Bear down as a bundle target, making things really hard for me to work around. Plus KO my Iron Hands. And really, I just didn't have enough gas in the tank, but didn't have the right, you know, combination of cards in my hand to pull off like the boss plus amp on the next turn. So things just kind of spiraled out of control from there, and I lost the set. And around 13, I hit. Was this the one? I'm mixing my tournaments now. I think I hit a Goldango. Wait, no, that was Merida.
You hit a Goldango?
No. That was Merida. I was thinking. I had another Maridon. I had another Maridon. This was another player from the UK. Nice guy. It was game three was just like an awkward set. I mean, literally, I'm like, all right, we're going to game three. You know, it was just kind of a back and forth thing. I have to go first, and I'm like, man, I only have hands and Latias. I'm like, man, okay, I'm in trouble here. He opens Mew, benches Magnemite, attaches to Mew, and pass. And then I top deck Secret Box, so I'm like, finally able to like, okay, I'm like, okay, now I can get my supporter, get myself, take the knockout on the Mew. He promotes the Magnemite, draws for turn, evolves to Magneton, and passes. He shows me his hand. It's six energy. He like his hand was literally just all energy.
he should just popped out. I can't.
Yeah.
But,
like, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it was. So again, you know, cheesy way to win there. Unfortunate that the set had to end like that. But it got me to 8-4-1, end up top 256. Another entry for the list, and another 100 points, putting me in a good spot for the World Championships. And actually, I think, you know, we're seeing the numbers, but actually I think ended up in top 16 for Stipend Chase too. So that's,
heck yeah, bro.
So it's been a good quarter for me. Looking forward to still next couple events, Atlanta, maybe Milwaukee, and of course NAIC. So things went well, and it's always a fun time in Europe, in London.
Yeah. Europe's a good time. Parker, what were you doing as like the day was going on and you were like following along, or were you able to follow along on Friday? We had to work or.
A little bit. I was refreshing Poke data in Arcanine like religiously, because not I, I, I not You guys weren't like slow posting your results, but I was like,
well, no,
I have
so,
to
what,
know.
Okay,
so
you have to know right now.
I have
so
to know.
if you don't know, Parker, here's what happened, right? So the Wi-Fi in the venue when we come in, there's a password that you have to enter. It was Jigglypuff with a capital J. And if you had that, it was fine. Like the Wi-Fi like kind of worked okay for like the first round and a half. And then there was a large group of people that were not figuring out where the password was or how to get it. And because it was up by the pairings.
Yeah.
They removed the password requirement. But when they did that, they added a 10-minute timer to everyone's Wi-Fi sign in. So when you signed in, after 10 minutes, no matter if you were using it or not, it timed you out and you had to completely sign back in. And the Wi-Fi was just brutal because there was just so much going on. But yeah, meanwhile, like, just the Wi-Fi was terrible. Like, it wasn't great anyways. It definitely feels like you may have outgrown the Excel Center, maybe a little bit, but like, I don't know where the hell else you're going
to
go.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild to say, but I mean, we had, you know, 3,300 Masters, the largest Western tournament of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, not even close. It wasn't like the last one was 32, and like no, like the last one was like 2,600. So like,
yeah,
I think it's an incredible sign that they like gave us this much space and this much rain to like grow the event so much. And honestly, it just makes me pumped for New Orleans. Like they had that 4,000 level kicker, which you said, oh haha, I'll never get there. But it's like, hey, maybe they'll say the cap is 4,200 Masters, and like 4,100 will show up, right? I mean, like that can be kind of cool. I mean, Excel Center is definitely quirky, right? You know, you got to go down 2 flights of steps to go to the bathroom. Interesting Wi-Fi situation. I tried the Wi-Fi and just ended up using data. But
my data didn't even work down there, dude. It was bad.
Oh, well, not downstairs. Yeah, I had to wait until I got back upstairs and out of the venue. Because also when you went to the bathrooms, you had to exit the venue, then go down 2 flights of stairs, and then go out and then go back into the other entrance. But,
All
right. It was a fun time in London.
So let's review our predictions. And I was kind of multitasking a little bit here. I got the ID rate for this event. There was 51 games that had a record of 18 points coming in to round 9. 32 tables had a match result. Oh, sorry, 32 tables had a tie, and the other difference, whatever the number is, 21, 22. 19. No, 22.
So 32 to 15, 1.
Oh, you're right, 19. Yeah. 19 players had a match result. And two of those people out of those 19 were Daniel Magda and James Cox,
wow,
who finished in top 8. So that's your sign, guys. Play it out in round 9 if you want a chance to do well in the tournament. So it looks like tie rate was 62%. If you guys are trying to keep track at home, because the Limitless calculator now has an ID rate and it's automatically set to 0.8. I usually kind of bump it down to 0.7. Let's review the meta. So day 1, the meta was Dragapult at 18.3%, Gardevoir 12.3%, Archaon 11.7%, Maridon 9.8%, Lugia 8.2%, and Cloth at 4.1%. So if we look at our predictions here, Dragapult, me and Parker both had it. We were both under percentage. Like, Parker said 14, I said 15. We thought Maridon would be second. Both of us did. It was down to 4th. We both said Gardy was going to be 9 or 8. It was at 12. Our predictions are a little rough here. We both said Lugia would be at 7-something. Lugia was 8.2. And neither of us said Cloth was going to be in the top 6. So, looking back at our predictions for the meta, we were a little bit off there, Parker. What do you think about that?
I thought I put Cloth, but I guess I didn't. But what was my number 6?
On Gardy, you had Bolt, Raging Bolt, that's 6%.
Okay. Did I have Archaladon on there?
Yeah, you had Archaladon at 8%.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, Raging Bolt's all the way down to less than 4% at this tournament.
Less played than Goldango.
Crazy, actually, right?
Yeah. Thank God. Thank God.
I think the big takeaway for me is, like, you know, I think people get into this mindset of like looking at like recent tournaments too much, especially with Merida only being like 2 weeks before UIC. Like, if you're a true Guardi gamer or a true Dragapult gamer, like, you're not going to see Merida results and be like, oh, I should switch my pick because of it. And then especially Puerto Rico, like, I don't know. People even care about what happened to Puerto Rico. I mean,
well, that's
like
why I thought
it was like a
Raging
week
Bull
away,
was
you
gonna
know?
still gotta be up there, right? Because it was up there in Merida.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the. I also, I mean, if anyone had any remaining faith in Charizard, that is gone now. Those
I
10%
mean,
in Merida.
Yeah, it's under 4% and
under Cerulege.
Under Cerulege.
Ain't no way more people played Cerulege than Charizard.
This is true.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen! Oh my goodness.
So our next prediction was the best rogue play. Parker said Goldango, which there was a large group of players that played Goldango, and to a top four finish and a pros interviews coming up momentarily. Stay tuned. I said Regidrago, 17th place. So Parker, I think you get that one. You won that prediction. The next question was, what did Tord play, or what would Tord play? Parker, you said Terapagos. I said Pidgeot Control. You're both wrong. Tord played Dragapult. He played Dragapult Dusknoir with a Blood Moon Ursulina. I think he also played Defiance Ban.
I think he even played Dusknoir, did he?
No Dusknoir.
No Dusknoir, just straight Dragapult?
Yeah.
I think the big takeaway from Tord is that he posted his list in his Tord's Kitchen Discord like the night before type of thing. So if you actually look, there's actually a decent number of players who played that exact 60.
Yeah, there's six players, yeah. You know who didn't post their list the day before?
I'm going to say it. Anyways.
But you know, Tord, I mean, Tord with a really cool list with the double Dominion, double Bidoof, Latias EX to help to combo with the Blood Moon Ursulina. Also played the Hawlucha, Return of Hawlucha with Dragapult.
Hawlucha.
Other cool calls. Yeah, did have the Defiance Band. Also, three bosses orders in Dragapult.
Yeah, one Countercatcher. Wild.
And Unfair Stamp is the ace spec of choice. So I think really leading into like a... Oh, you went KO'd my Bidoof? Cool, I'm going to go attach an energy Bidoof, Unfair Stamp. And like, get out of it. It's like, okay, cool, now I'm going to go Dragon Ball you. And I just win. Oh, you KO'd my Dragon Ball? Cool, Blood Moon. Like,
yeah, that was interesting to see. Next question and prediction was, what's the highest placing United States player? Parker said Alex Szymanski. I said Isaiah Bradner. We are both wrong. It's going to be Xander Perreault, who will be on this podcast and here then... Less than 5 minutes, guys. We're almost there.
Who ended up placing higher?
I think Isaiah
Szymanski
did.
Was 70, and Bradner 55. Very close. Very close.
Mm.
Two good choices.
Now one made money, one didn't. It wasn't close.
Ooh.
All right. Next question was highest placing Charizard deck. Parker said top 16, not a sum cut. I said top 32. Survey says. Oscar Madsen at ninth place with Dragapult Charizard and not a sim cut. So Parker got
count?
It like all yeah, it's a Charizard deck.
Absolutely.
Are you looking for any Charizard, any count of Charizard
yeah,
decks.
Any
okay,
count
gotcha,
of Charizard,
gotcha.
Yeah. So that counts. Parker got it on the dot, top 16, no a sim cut. Which is wild. Over
Parker's
under players
like
in day two, the over under was set at 300. And we both said over. There was 360 players in day two. Shout out Connor Fenton for 360th place.
With no deck? Or I don't know.
He played Bidoof Terapagos.
He didn't play
Bidoof
Terapagos, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, just, I mean, like, actually, yeah, just, actually, I don't even know if I think it was just the Bidoof attacking deck.
Oh, there's,
yeah,
oh,
like
that's right, that's right,
deck.
That's right.
Yeah, this
is
like a control
yeah.
deck, right?
Okay,
yeah. It's, I forgot his name from Australia. It's like the video that he had.
Anyways, next up, ASIM cut. 12 players was the over-under number. Parker said over, I said under. It was looking like it was going to be 12, and then one table tied, and from there on, it was a
clean
cut at 8, so there was no ASIM. So I think we're both wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, we're both wrong.
And then the winning deck, Parker said Dragapult, I said Lugia. We both know we're both wrong already. But Parker,
that's
I think
closer, though.
You got finals. You at least got finals. I'll give that one to you.
Yeah, where was Lugia?
Yeah, for real, though. Where is the first Lugia?
31st.
Yikes. Below Regidrago.
Below multiple Regidragos. Wait, one didn't even make top 32?
Yeah, 41st
yeah,
place is the 32. Highest placing Lugia.
Holy
yeah,
smokes.
Not Lugia's tournament.
That's one thing to call out as far as conversion rates. The top six decks, all of them had a positive conversion rate except for Lugia. Lugia went from like 8.2 to 5%. But everything else had a positive conversion rate, which is crazy. And then Goldango jumped from 3.9 to 8.3. It's pretty interesting to see that.
It's tough to be rookie right now.
Let's see.
Unless you're going to Vancouver. Maybe.
Cerulean's dropped off big time. It's not even on the list anymore. Yeah. Anyways, that's our kind of review of European and National Championships in London this year. We're excited to get Xander Perreault's thoughts. Without further ado, here's our interview with Xander Perreault on Goldango and his thoughts on the European International Championships. Hey everyone, my name is Eric Ridgway. I'm the host of the Beach Court Podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And if you're enjoying it, please take a moment to like, comment, subscribe on this video on YouTube. It'd really help out the podcast a lot. We've got more episodes, highlights, and more coming your way. Thanks for listening. And now back to the show.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Beach Court Podcast. We have a special guest. We have Xander Perreault. Right, fresh off a top four finish at the European International Championship, another than Goldango EX, but Xander, also a three-time regional champion, top four finisher of Worlds, very accomplished player and deck builder in his own right, and part of a very successful testing group as well. So, Xander, how's it going? How are you feeling?
I mean, feeling good. You know, nice to have a cut at a tournament and haven't had one in the last couple of years, you know. Kind of busy with college, busy with other stuff, and also just kind of not really winning. So nice to be able to put a finish on the board, get top four, get an automatic Worlds invite, and then also take home a sweet trophy at the same time.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, automatic Worlds invite is huge, man. I bet that's a weight lift off your shoulder. How are you feeling about that?
Feeling good. You know, I think one thing for me is that I'm now enjoying kind of my working era, just graduated and everything. So being able to kind of put some, take some energy off, not have to go to League Cups and League Challenges every weekend to try and get points to accumulate that invite is nice. And also now take some pressure off my shoulders. Don't need to worry about like bombing out regionals in the future. So definitely a weight off the shoulders and glad to be locked up.
Awesome. And again, a huge finish. Like I said, it's been a few years since the top cut, but I think you showed up in a big way, right? The largest Pokemon tournament ever back in a top cut. So we'll get into a little bit more about your Goldango run later. But first, you know, want to get to know you a little more. Want to let the audience get to know you a little bit more. So we're just going to get you some quick hitting questions and, you know, get to know Xander a little bit. So first off, you said, so your name and where are you from, Xander? Where are you located now? Where are you from? What's some of your background?
So I'm definitely what I'd say a Chicago local. Grew up in that area in the suburbs. That's kind of where I started playing Pokemon. Some of the local tournaments out in Rockford or in the city. And then now I'm actually based out in New York, working out here. So been here for about 6 months and probably will be here for the next couple of years.
Yeah. And had to hop right back to work
what
right after
of New York
the...
are you in?
I live in Manhattan, like around Grand Central.
Okay.
But I'm hopping around a little bit, trying to explore different parts of the city, probably move out to Brooklyn in a year or 2 years or something. So yeah, figure out where I'm staying. Yeah.
You probably had a direct flight, didn't you?
I did, you know, a nice direct flight out of Newark, though. So
Newark.
Getting back was not fun. Had to hop on New Jersey Transit, my least favorite thing in the world, then take another train and then another train. So it's just a long haul.
I flew back in the JFK. That was like where my layover was, and my wife's pregnant at home, and I felt bad, you know, because being away all weekend. So she like loves New York bagels. So I literally just like had like a 4 hour layover. I left the, you know, left the venue. Like I took an Uber to like local bagel place. Like I bought three bagels, and they gave me a baker's dozen. I was like, you guys are wholesome. Like I love New York, man. It's a great town up there.
Yeah, that New York spirit.
Yeah.
Hard to find, but if you found it, that's awesome. So.
Yeah, but I was like, I told him, I got my pregnant wife on some. He's like, cool, take 12. I'm like, all right, sure, man.
That's epic. All right, Xander, what's your favorite Pokemon?
Favorite Pokemon has got to be Lucario. Growing up, just always was like the cool Pokemon. Diamond and Pearl, I think, was the main game that I, not my first game, but definitely the game I kind of like remember the most. Loved the story, loved the Pokemon, everything. So that's definitely the top for me. And then other favorites have to be Teddy Ursa, which is an homage to a deck I used to play back in 2011. Vileplume, also an homage, but also a very cool Pokemon. And then Garbodor, also a TCG homage. So all my favorites are either
All
Lucario
those
or
dogs
all
have
card
one thing in
GameStop.
common.
Yeah,
It's very
yeah.
toxic.
Just a little bit.
I'm surprised you don't like playing Toxic Powder right now.
You know, if
Hey, too
somebody told
soon,
me to
too
play
soon, too
that,
soon. So.
if somebody gave that to me, I would have played it, but we were all on the Goldango train.
So we know your favorite Pokemon have to do a lot of TCG decks. So what does it say? You know, are any of those Pokemon the favorite deck you've ever played? What is the favorite deck you've ever played?
Think my favorite deck that I would have to say is called Bear Hugger. It's a deck that I won the US National Tournament with in 2011, and it revolved around Ursaring Prime, Yanmega Prime, Sunfloro, Roserade, and Vileplume. And essentially, you were like a setup, sort of big stage one, stage two deck. You would put Vileplume in play, which locked items for both players. Yanmega could attack for free if both players had the same number of cards in hand. So you play a card like Copycat, play Judge, just to set equal cards. And then you'd be able to set up your board with Sunflora, inflict special conditions like Confusion, which was a much bigger pain under item lock before with the Roserade. And then Ursaring would also take some big knockouts, and Teddy Ursa had a coin flip for item lock. So that deck was kind of like very cheeky, pretty good into the meta, especially when special conditions used to shut off Poké Powers. And that's probably my all-time favorite deck. And then my more modern answer would be Espeon Garbodor, just because I love Trash Lanch, Garbotoxin, toxic stuff, I suppose, according to Eric, but also a lot of skill expression in Trash Lanch too.
That's awesome. And again, you know, I think a true testament to how long you've been dominant at the game, right? We're talking about your top four finish in 2025, and you're like, "Oh, I also won U.S. Nationals back in 2011." So, you know, been playing around for a little while and been achieving at all levels. So, props to you. All right, so let's hop into Goldango. So, right, recently piloted Goldango top four finish at UIC. And not only you played Goldango, but the rest of your testing group played it, right? Lots of high-profile players, you know, Bradner and Rahul Reddy, right? You had a lot of your friends, the folks you've been playing with for a while. So a lot of people were very, very surprised to see Goldango show up in this huge way, played by so many talented players and with CC such success. So help us walk through like the mindset. Like how did you and your group get to this point to play Goldango? And how did you feel, you know, submitting your list Thursday night and saying, "Yeah, I'm playing Goldango"?
I mean, I would say the origin of the deck, I think it actually started out when Mustafa Toba, another friend of ours who's in the testing group, currently in Michigan, he was the one who might have played it first at like League Cup or other stuff like that while working with Isaiah on the deck. So we didn't, going into the tournament, I think by the time EYC came around, it was a deck like on our radar, but wasn't like, oh, we were entirely sure we were going to play it. It just ended up being like the more we thought about the deck as a whole, kind of how it was positioned into the meta, and the fact that 260 HP is unironically like a lot for some decks to deal with. Like Dragapult, with the Monkey Dory, you're able to really mess up their damage. They need to pop Gusnor. On top of other decks that we thought would be in the room, like Gardevoir, kind of can't really deal with the Goldango without like overcommitting damage on their board, in which case Vacuum and Monkey Dory can do things. So over time, as we sort of critiqued the list, didn't think that it was very affected by Badoo, at least compared to other kind of decks. And then adding in some of the key cards, like taking out the Palkia, adding in the evolution, shaping the list towards a much better, like well-rounded Goldango deck, especially for the meta. That's when we sort of knew, like, oh, this is something that could do really well. And then also coming out of Merida, we knew that the meta would be like Gardevoir, Dragapult, Maridon, some Lugia, and then surely I'm forgetting something, but basically everything in that cluster was really good. And then all the fringe decks like Snorlax, Lost Box, Clough were some of the ones that we didn't want to face, but we thought over the course of a tournament we would definitely hit more good matchups than bad, and that ended up being the case for a lot of us, which is why we had a bunch of people out in day two.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the list a little bit. I mean, you really changed the Palkia out, and you know, and your only attacker really is just the Goldango, right? And like, I think that's been the strong point of the deck, is just drawing the cards and attacking with that guy. Every time I've played it, the problem is finding in the EXs. So the Arvin really makes sense with the evolution. Did you guys test any other tools, throughout your process? And what kind of decisions did you guys make on what tools you tried to test?
Yeah, I mean, the original list had a couple other ones. We talked about Bravery Charm for a little bit so that you can sort of survive like a Radiant Greninja attack, or maybe you survive like an Alakazam plus six from Dragapult. So we experimented a lot with other tools, especially considering Arvin was just like our main draw supporter there with the Cypher as well. But being able to draw two is good, especially when you want to discard Superior, discard with Ultra Ball, stuff like that. But really, just evolution was the most powerful one of them all. Other stuff from the list, like cutting out the Palkia, that came about from the fact that really is hard to attack with Palkia on turn two, or like more importantly, you use Palkia to load up the Greninja. And unless you're drawing Switch or like having Turo in your opening hand, you're really not going to get to use that Shuriken on turn two. And then after that point, it's really not all that necessary because all the decks require an EX Pokemon in play. Like Dragapult needs that down, Gardevoir needs that down, random Charizard, random whatever is going to have a two prizer in play that you can just knock out with the Goldango. And so, not having the Palkia in our deck, we were able to make it a bit more streamlined. Palkia also can just lose you the game outright. Like if you open another two prizer, they take two prizes before you, you're really stuck. And by adding more into our deck, like the Professor Turtle scenario, then you're able to sort of buy that turn back that you would have otherwise accelerated from getting that Greninja attack. Like if you're thinking, oh, I could take two with Greninja, and then that's why I'm ahead in the two prize race, you can instead just take one with the Goldango and then Turtle it up against like Gardevoir, Dragapult, whatever, when you would have otherwise needed that like turn. So you can either buy the extra turn by getting super lucky with the Greninja Palkia turn two, or by having a Turtle at any point in the game. As long as it's just like a little bit timely. So much lower variance in being able to do that. Turtle also is nice for random things, being able to pick up Sezzinipity, yada yada yada. And so overall, like even though we were a Goldango deck, you're still very much able to take the knockouts when you want, Energy Surge Pro to just grab all your energy, knock out that first big guy, and then clean up the game with Superior and Cypher at the end.
Yeah, I think especially in a format where lots of people were worried about Bidoof, Goldango kind of showed up and said, "Hey, you can kind of manage for the most part, besides a couple of fringe bad matchups." I think also like the Monkey Dory, if we want to talk about that a little more, I mean, and really, I think it's just the specific use cases for it. It's kind of been a joke, where you'd see a lot of decks throwing the random Monkey Dory, kind of in Japan or in Champions Leagues. But here, we not only saw it in the Goldango, but it actually stayed, and from my understanding, carried its weight a lot throughout the tournament.
Yeah, so that's definitely a very important part of the deck. Not just for like the Dragapult matchup, but it's also really getting into Gardevoir too. So the number one thing that the Monkey Dory does is it kind of forces your Dragapult opponent to kind of be on their toes a little bit. So if they want to knock out two Goldango, when you have that Monkey Dory, they need to like use a Dusclops or a Dusknoir, because otherwise they can't just do their 260 counter catcher 260 take four and with Iona whatever else. So it really just kind of forces them to have a little bit more pressure on top of saves you an energy in the long run. So if you have a Monkey Dory down, you now have 30 damage you can push back to the Dragapult, and then you only need six to knock it out as opposed to seven, which in the grand scheme of things doesn't seem like a lot, but that's probably a Superior and a Vessel as opposed to two Superior sometimes. And so that really just comes up here and there. On top of that, it's also really good against Gardevoir. You're able to push back, knock out Screamtail sometimes, knock out Drifloon sometimes, especially because they're going to try to pick off your little guys. The Monkey Dory gives you more ability to just kind of play with the damage and push it back. So overall, already playing the Dark Energy, we play two copies just so we don't prize it. And there's no, you want more energy in the deck anyway. Three metals enough. And carried the tournament, just like really good against Dragapult, good against Gardevoir. Also really good against other random things too. Like there were one or two times throughout the day that I could have done like a cheeky Monkey Dory play Tried to do it in top four, wouldn't have worked anyway because of like switch cart, but tried to do it against Illuvia, tried to do it lots of times against Gardevoir Dragapult on the weekend. And then at the very least, it is like something that can attack Mimikyu too. So it's got
Yeah,
a lot
true.
of uses randomly and definitely deserves to be in the deck.
Awesome.
Did you use Mind Bend at all?
Now, I mean, as much as I talk about, oh, Monkey Dory this, Monkey Dory that, I hit all good matchups until top four. So I never had to like stress about it. I was just using Gildango all the way.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So speaking of that, right? You're turning through good matchups. You end day one within the record of 8-0-1, right? Was it at that moment or was it earlier in the day? Like, when did you realize that, like, hey, something's different about this deck and there's something special about this run that I'm going on right now? Like, when did it click in
So
your head?
I think actually, I was maybe I think I started out 2-0 or 3-0, and then I played Hedrick and we tied because I didn't play a single game against Dragapult before the tournament. I picked up the deck mid Thursday, and
So
then
you got the deck
most
Thursday
I got the
from the
deck
team.
Thursday. I played some games against Gardevoir from the Gardevoir side. I played some games against Maridon, and I was like, all right, like we're chilling. But then I didn't, quite frankly, I did not play that well. I lost game one because I played poorly, got a little lucky in game two, but was generically fine and got a tie. And then from there, I think I played like another good matchup after that, forget what it was. But then I realized like, oh, this deck is really good. And it's just like, from there, I actually like, I got a text from like a friend of mine. And I saw it and I was like, I'm not going to respond until the end of the day. I need to lock in. And then I went from 4-0-1 to 8-0-1. And then from there, I was like, I could sort of taste it a little bit. Like, I could
There you
see
go.
myself like doing really well, making top cut. Like, oh, this is my big return. And then, especially after round 10, when I had the mirror match against Grand Shen and then I won that one, the bracket was kind of set up for me to hit some Dragapult and stuff. Some good matchups going in until top cut. And then it was like, all right, we're the chosen one. We got to win this one for the group. And that's when I could sort of like picture it.
That's awesome. I mean, I know you mentioned the match with Hedrick. I mean, any other particular like key moments or like highlights matches from Swiss that you want to, shout out before we talk about like, your round 12 and then into the top cut?
Yeah, I would say against Oscar Madsen, which oh wait, actually I guess that is the round 12. So let me pick a different one.
I mean, according to Arcanine, you hit some others on round 5, 6, and 7. So, like, what'd you hit after Hedrick?
Ooh, I wish I had the memory to tell you, but they were all good matchups.
No thoughts, just coin bonus.
No thoughts, just
Yeah.
coin bonus, superior energy retrieval, boom. All right, cool.
That's honestly, that's pretty much all that I did.
I mean, is there
That's
like, so I was theorizing Dragapult a little bit just because I haven't played it, just like you haven't. Coming in, which is insane. How do you play around the Bidoof there? I mean, do you think that there's enough energy in the deck to carry? Is it because you went from 10 to 12? Is that really what changes, Bidoof's strategy there? 'Cause I think with 10, like you probably can't beat Dragapult, right?
I mean, so I've never played the deck with less than 12 because I just picked it up on the Thursday. But the number one thing is that that's the one matchup that you want to go second against because the way you lose is you don't get a wide board and then you get Bidoof'd. Against Dragapult, you really want to get the like three Gildango in play just so that you're able to survive like a Dusknoir or whatever Dragapult shenanigans to clear your board. And realistically, that's just why you want to go second against them to stop them from Bidoofing you. When you go first, you've still got four pop in your deck. You can still like have that Gildango go attach knockout in turn two. They're probably not going to pop you afterward. So it can definitely be frustrating. Like if you draw poorly, you're going to get Bidoofed. You might lose the game. Excuse me. But it's definitely more than 50-50 favored with the Monkey Dory with the other pieces. So even though it can be like a little frightening, it's still definitely your best matchup in the room, and you kind of gotta know that it's favorable, even though it might be a little uncomfortable in those
Right.
like first one or two turns.
Right.
Yeah.
Were
Now
you
your
guys
top eight
choosing
match.
auto first or auto second? Like, if you didn't know the matchup.
Blinding first and then second into Dragapult and Claw.
Okay.
Now all the Badoo decks, basically.
Yeah, the
So
Badoo
pretty much
decks,
forcing you to
yeah.
go wide. Other than that, get your be able to evolve quickly. So all right, let's
Yeah.
talk about round 12. So hit Oscar Madsen on effectively a winning end, right? You know, spoiler, you do end up winning this one to go to 34 match points, like, and basically securing top seed. So tell us about this match, like how you're feeling going into it. Dragapult Charizard, Oscar played a very, very good tournament. You know, tell us about how that match went and, and that feeling of I'm locked in for top cut as a number one seed.
So I knew going into it that it would be generically a pretty good matchup, just because, like, I mean, it's Charizard Dragapult. I'm the better deck in terms of like taking knockouts. I'm quicker. I can pop him quicker than he can pop me. And then also thinking about he probably plays Alakazam, not the Radiant Charizard, so I don't have to really worry about like getting offset 2-1 in the price range later on. No Dusknoir, so Iono Shenanigans are less of a problem. The really one thing that I do have to be careful about is like if I take one and then he takes two in any sort of case, like if he can buy back those turns with Dragapult or Charizard, then that's where I can be under the water a little bit. I think in game one what ended up happening as I was able to like E-Search Pro and pop a Rotom with a boss on turn three. So this is before I knew exactly what was in his deck. And I went for this because I was like, all right, I just got to take the first two, especially knowing that he plays Unfair Stamp. Worst case scenario would be like, I take a quick knockout, like kind of too quickly. He comes back and Dragapult hits me. I miss the knockout on Dragapult, and then I'm like super stuck. So that's how I could lose the game. So instead, I waited until like I ciphered some more stuff on top, got the boss kill on the Rotom with like three Goldangle in play. And then here, he then hit me for 240 with the Charizard, I think. And then I popped the Charizard, maybe using Monkey Dory or something. He then Dragapulted. And then I bundled out the Dragapult because I didn't get enough from the stamp or from the Iono to kill it. And I could pop a bench Pokemon for three. And then I think Iona Mita won. And then I later like stretchered the bundle or boss, killed something, and then won game one. So like very honestly closer than I expected in the sense that like it's still really hard to get through like a bunch of fatties. Dragapult still is huge. Getting stamped to two instead of like Iona to
Yeah.
four
Brilliant.
is honestly like much more annoying than you think, especially if they don't pop you right away and activate the Fez.
Yeah.
So I was sweating a little bit like in those matchups, like even though I knew I was like doing well on paper, keeping pace with the knockouts and everything, it definitely could have gone worse had like I not drawn as well in those games.
Yeah, because like you, I mean, Cypher can really like set up your next turn, right? And I'm sure you used it for that a lot, but with stamp, it just disrupts your Cypher. Did you have any situations like that where you like Cyphered and then he hit you with a stamp? Did you know he's playing stamp game one, or how'd that go?
Yeah, I knew he had stamped before the match, and I don't think there was ever a turn where like I ciphered and then he stamped me. It was more awkward in that like I think to take that first knockout or that knockout on the big fatty, I like needed to cipher for the cards, like for the pro and everything. So I didn't get to leave anything on top. So that wasn't a problem for like, oh, he stamped away my cipher. But then because he stamped me on four, it's like I wasn't able to then use Cypher later to then set up for the Iona to two.
Right.
So the other alternative would be he Ionas me to four. I now have four cards instead of two. In the event that I even was able to keep something with Cypher, that's going to set me up for another Cypher. So the fact that I wasn't able to sort of build up any momentum made it a lot harder and a lot more dicey to deal with it, especially knowing that I couldn't just take like a quick knockout on turn two. Like with one Goldango in play, getting stamped and then getting smacked with the Dragapult, I would certainly lose the game because I just need to draw Arvin or Cypher for the pro to then kill the Dragapult. But even then, I'm on odd prizes. There's no Dusknoir coming or anything like that. I could still very much just lose by not being able to get three big knockouts after getting Stamp, Iona, Iona.
So you do end up coming away with that set. Any other highlights from that set that as you brought it home?
Yeah, game two at the very end, I think he Iona me to one or Iona me to two or something. Yeah. And I basically was sequencing to draw through my entire deck. I either needed to find boss and four energy, or I think my superior and both stretcher and an energy for my deck to seven pop the active. So like I had two different routes, and like I'm trying to sequence correctly, sort of burn everything down. And I'm pretty sure I did everything correct or mostly correct. Like nothing egregious, like missing out and drawing a card, like thinning a Pokemon or something. But at the very end, like I had to use stretcher for Fez because, and that removed the possibility of winning with the knockout on the active play. And then I had three cards in deck and one of them was superior. And it's like, well, if the superior is the bottom card, then I lose game two and we tie. But then superior was in the top two. So came down to a 66% chance to like tie or win that round. But like, in the grand scheme of all the probabilities, it would have been so unlikely for me to miss because I drew 12 other cards that turn.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it was very much a sweat at the end when it's like, I need the superior or I just, I don't get there.
Yeah. But you got locked in a number one seed. So,
how many times did you prize eSearch Pro? Did you keep count?
Maybe like twice, to be honest. It was really low.
I mean,
that's
not much.
Yeah, I think I didn't go to many game threes, considering I just won a lot of sets 2-0. So I think maybe I would have been, I maybe played 30 games on the weekend because I had 15, actually 9 plus 4, but one was an ID. So 12 plus 2. So 14 rounds. I maybe played 32-ish games.
Wow.
Like 4 game threes, maybe 5 game threes, 6 game threes.
Impressive.
And then I only prized Evo a couple times as well, which was pretty important.
Yeah, I'm surprised you guys didn't play two, honestly.
It's just a space thing. Like, you're only ever going to use it when you go second, or like you go first and you get Badood or something. So it doesn't come up often because that's only ever happening against the slow matchups. In the fast matchups, you just have to start attacking on turn two. No matter what.
Yeah. Plus, when you're choosing blind first, a lot of people are choosing blind second in the format. You probably just end up going first when you wanted to a lot type of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So, all right. We're going to talk about top eight now. So, you go from a very favored matchup, again, the Dragapult matchup against James Cox. You know, I think that's a great match to kind of show the matchup. Even when he's able to go Badoo early, you know, they can't ever really take a two prize early. And then you're able to kind of constantly chain those attacks. So you had a very favorite matchup in top eight, and then you hit probably a tough, one of the toughest matchups in the room against our eventual champion in top four with the Cloth Teropkos, or more for you, the Badoo with Mochi Teropkos deck. So tell us about how top eight felt, top eight and top four, and how that run felt for you.
So I was super nervous going into top eight before standings got announced, because I knew that I was going to tie Ryuki, because I thought that I didn't want to then like play him and then either lose and get matched up against like a random X11, or play him and win, but then I'd send him to the X2 bracket and then I would probably face him from asymmetrical because I would be number one for a seed undisputed. So I thought just tying so that we're next to each other more or less would be the safest thing. But what I didn't realize is that there were two Snorlax playing at X2 and then they both won and made it into cut. So I could have very easily just paired into one of the Snorlax in top eight and then instantly ended my run because I can't kill a Cornerstone. Oh, so once when it got announced that I was playing against James, and I was like, all right, like we're so happy. And then Ryuki was paired into Vinny playing Dragapult. So then I thought that Ryuki would win. Vinny would win. Yeah. And then I would play another Dragapult. Mm-hmm. And then Ryuki won. So then I was like, all right, but I didn't know that till after my top eight was done, but I was certainly happy to get paired at the Dragapult. I had played against like four throughout the tournament at that point, so I kind of knew what I was doing, at least for the most part. and then was able to draw pretty well. Thankfully, he priced the Badu in game two just to like make life a little bit easier, and then was able to take it.
Good. Yeah. And then top four, right? And I know I remember your interview saying like, "Hey, yeah, you know, excited about the top eight. I just learned I'm playing against, you know, probably the worst matchup in top four, so we'll see how that goes." You know, I know you tried to cheat some games, but you know, it's pretty tough when they can KO your single prizes under item lock.
Yeah, there were a couple of big moments in those two games that really just like set me back or really like screwed me over. Number one was when he like got around the bundle and was able to just start killing Gimme Ghouls, because he was able to Badu kill a Gimme Ghoul in that game one with the boss, and then I couldn't use the bundle to like clear it off the board for the rest of the game, because I needed to then like, I had one energy, so I killed the Badu, and then if I use bundle, he's going to push like a one prizer, but I need to kill the Terrapagos with the Mochi, and then the same thing happened again, and then I couldn't ever like rid my board of easy targets for him to knock out. At this point, I didn't even know that he had Kieran in his deck. So like, I would have, he just had one more way to like knock out that fourth final Goldango. So I probably would have lost anyway, but then like getting that Gimme Ghoul knocked out. So he took a prize and just didn't clear my liability was annoying. And then in game two, I opened the Fezzendipity, which is the worst of all. Cause like he can kill it with Claw, he can kill it with Terrapagos, whatever. That guy's so useless. And then it was like, that also is just like not the best. There certainly were a couple things I could have done differently in that game. Just like maybe small things here and there that could have given me a better odds of winning, but the matchup's unfavorable. Probably like 60-40 at best. 65-35 is probably a better sort of analysis of what it is. So wasn't too upset when I lost. Just wish it was a little bit closer. Maybe got to like actually take the first two prizes or something, but
yeah,
it happens.
Okay, I mean, I know we were rooting for you, but I'm sure you know, leaving with the top four, leaving with another Pikachu trophy, you know, World's Invite. I'm sure you're feeling pretty good about that. So
it was kind of full circle, playing all toxic decks and then hitting the toxic deck in top four with toxic powder.
I mean, if you consider, if you think item lock and ability lock is toxic compared to like the deck that won the finals by donking twice, like I don't know, I can't really argue with that.
All right, well, let's talk about your deck again heading into the next few events. So Goldango, right? You know, you're the de facto Goldango, you know, source for all knowledge at this point. So again, you know, I don't know if you're going to Vancouver or other future tournaments, maybe not locals if you're busy, you know, with your Worlds invite, but anyone playing Goldango, you know, for these next few tournaments, you know, how do you think it's positioned? Do you think it's a deck that can still, you know, build off of your success? Or, you know, think maybe you need to change a couple cards to have the success that it needs in maybe Vancouver or some locals?
Yeah, I mean, I think the list is pretty perfect. You can't really change anything to make it better against the bad matchups. Like, a lot of those decks just beat you on paper because they're less linear. Cornerstone, you just can't kill Cornerstone. Lost Box, they just have Pikachu. And so if you want to like tech for them a little bit, you could throw in Cologne in the deck, but even still, you're probably going to lose anyway. And then for Cloth, it's like, their deck is unerotic. Like their deck just Badoos you and takes a prize. And then unless you take two after that, you're stuck. And there's really no secret sauce you can put in your deck to do that, just because the Badu item locking you is so strong. So I think the deck is still like in the same position as it was for EUIC. You just have to be worried about people now picking up Cloth because it won the tournament, especially at like upcoming locals. That's probably going to be more popular than like Vancouver. People at Vancouver will play like whatever deck they want to play. People at locals might be more likely to just pick up the winning deck because they want to play it. So be mindful of that. But overall, deck seems like it's still in a fine position. Wouldn't change anything about the list. And then for post rotation, haven't thought much about it. I'm still trying to figure out what's rotating and what's not rotating. But I look before this.
Lose, yeah, Greninja and like Heavy Ball, I think, are the only two cards you lose, right?
Pokestop too.
Oh, Pokestop, yeah.
So I think it's still really viable, especially as like. Right? Yeah, but we're not playing the Irida. We're playing Arvin. Don't worry.
Yeah, he doesn't play Irida.
The big thing, I think, is that other decks might just be better at like taking two first. Like, for example, that Noctowl Terra deck that just like Crispins and takes two with Ogre Pond seems kind of annoying because then you just don't set up your Gibby Ghouls.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that seem annoying would be like that wall deck because you just can't kill a Cornerstone. And no amount of canceling cologne is going to get you through that unless you play like two or three, maybe three, like Silene or something. I don't know. So it's definitely still around, but you kind of have to be mindful of like the new shenanigans that aren't gatekept by the current standard decks anymore. But Goldango is a card still really strong. Coin bonus, you have all the glue that holds the deck together. You have eSearch Pro, but just kind of be thinking about how you're going to beat those bad matchups now, whether you got to change the deck. Maybe you don't play like a straight Goldango deck and you play like other stuff too. You have all the energy types to play with. So maybe you have like a backup attacker that beats those specific matchups. So there's a lot you can do with it. Be fun to experiment with.
Well, there's a Goldango Dragapult deck that ran around a little bit at one of the Champions Leagues. So
something cool
like that. So maybe there's something there. Maybe you'll even show up with it at a future tournament. So
I gotta peep that, see what it's about.
Oh, yeah, I'll find the list and send it over. So,
yeah.
Eric, any other closing questions on Goldango format, UIC, any of that?
No, I'm good, man. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, Xander, real quick, I want to give you a chance to shout out, you know, any shouts you have, any sponsors, and where people can find you.
Yeah, I would say you can find me on Twitter. So it's just my name, at Xander Perot. I don't post much, but that's definitely where I would post if I do. And other shout outs would be for the testing group. So Isaiah, Robul, John, Keon, Victor, Little Bakari, Big Bakari, Mustafa, everybody that was there at the tournament, joined us playing the deck. Everybody who was also just like there to support, parents, friends, everybody. So really great to have people support when I win and when I don't win. So they're all really great friends and great people, and I'm glad to be able to prepare for tournaments with them.
Awesome. Xander, so great having you on. Been great cheering for your success. You know, big top four with Goldango EX for the United States. Again, you know, top four, fantastic finish. And thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, welcome back. That was Xander Perot with his take on Goldango and why they played it. Really interesting to hear him talk. So hopefully you enjoyed that. If you did, press the like, comment, and subscribe below. We got some bigger guests hopefully planned for next week. We're still working on someone else for next week, so stay tuned to who that is. But before we get to our next topic, which is Crispin's Corner, I have to go into the trivia segment. I had multiple people talk to me in London about the trivia segment. I had one specifically say that, like, I have to ask you guys how many EXs are in sets. I'm not doing it today. You got time.
Yeah, good. Yeah, Journey Together is way too far.
Yeah.
I need a lot more time to not study for it.
Yeah, so you got time on that. I think it's going to be easy for you guys. But since I was deep diving into the data, the World Championship data, this is about the current standings of the North American International Championship, North American Top 125. So according to Seagrove TCG, which is a website that you could use to look at the top X data. It doesn't include locals. It only includes your best finish limits for all the major events. Out of all of the top 125, out of 125 people, there's only one that is in that top 125 that only has one finish on their record. Who was the player?
One finish in North America. But is currently in the top 125, right?
Correct. Currently in the top 125.
Who
is it? Azul?
I mean, he had to finish at Sacramento plus UIC. So.
Like this very second?
This very second, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, who else would have had, like, one strong finish? Like, a top eight, probably. And then, like, nothing since. To your face, man. You okay? What's going on?
I'm trying to think.
That's a thinking face.
I'm just like, is that even like possible? Because like,
well, I mean, if you no, I mean, like, if you get, here, hold on, if, like, if you like win, well, I guess,
am I allowed to look at the leaderboard?
No,
well, it's just majors, right? So, I mean, I guess if you had like 300 points, if you had like one top four,
okay,
and you're maybe in top 125 for like without majors,
yeah, it's just majors. And I will, I'll go a step further. Here, hold on, I'll give you, I'm not gonna give you their points because that's not fair. But for the 125th place, there's 320 points is 125th place.
Okay, so they got second place at a major, probably.
I mean, it's like, second place. Or first.
Does this include auto invites?
This does include auto invites.
So it has to be a second place person?
Oh, wait, well, I know, I guess if this includes a finish. I wonder if CJ has any other finishes. Christian Solis, who won Puerto Rico.
I guess it is.
Because I know he's been I mean, I don't know what to EYC. I know he's been traveling a little bit. I just don't know. I just don't know events before that. Because he did miss points at EYC because I'm pretty, because he hit at 0-2, he hit Steven, who is the other Maridon in top four at Puerto Rico at 0-2. So, because I caught up with them and heard that story. So
that's kind of crazy. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. Parker, anyone else you can think who maybe who got like second place at a regional and it hasn't really done anything since? And North America? Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a kind of a...
I can't think of anyone, honestly.
Yeah, man, Alexander just got 500 points, but he, or however many points for top four, but he had a top 16 at Knox, or Louisville.
I guess it could be people that were top eighted at IC.
I guess it could, yeah, I guess it could be a good finish at an IC. I probably just gotta go. I think my best guess right now is CJ Christian Solis. I don't know who else who would. I just don't know if he has other finishes, but I know he would definitely have his.
It's probably the best guess. I'm gonna be honest with you,
because he is important for your reporter, because I don't know how much he's traveled.
Well,
so
wait, you said he has. Oh wait, no, that was the lowest amount. It's 320.
Yeah.
So winning. So
you know, they have at least 320 points, which means probably second place at a regional or first place at a regional.
Okay.
Even like Mauricio has more points. Has other major finishes, so
I guess we just gotta send it, right?
All right, we'll lock in Christian Solis, CJ.
All right, there's only one player on the top 125 with 350 points. It is Christian Solis.
Yeah,
congratulations. I had a feeling you'd get that one. When I was deep diving, I was like, that's a pretty interesting question. So, like, I went to like other countries and I was like, okay, let me look at the leaderboard. Is there more? Like, every other country had, like, a lot more because it's, like, they're not as competitive. Europe is actually pretty competitive.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But, like, looking at OC, I see there's, like, a lot of people that are in the top X that have just one finish. But that makes sense, right? So, but yeah, congratulations. You guys got it right. So, well done.
Yeah, shout out Christian.
Cool. Shout out Christian, yeah. All right, next up, let's get on to our Crispin's Corner. Maddox, why don't you fire up Arcanine and give us two random matches, and Parker and I will tell you who wins that match.
Yeah, exactly. So again, we'll be sharing our screen for this next segment. How Crispin Corner works is we go and generate two random letters from our random letter generator, and I need to move the thing so I can actually see all the different screens, but it's fine, we'll figure it out. I do want to give a shout out to Play Pokemon, who posted the winning list, but then immediately after that, right after finals, posted the links to the RK9 roster. So again, just seeing more and more about these rosters getting released earlier so we can bring them to you quickly. Let's see. I need to figure out a better way to do this. One second. I forgot how to move this. But we'll
just
make
drag
it. Just drag it? Is that as simple as that? Oh my gosh, it is as simple as that. I'm a professional Zoom user, everyone. But anyways, so we'll go in random. We'll go in random letter generator. A couple letters here first. So we're gonna go with TW versus TD. So we got
those names.
TW, Camille
Twilight
Twice Fun.
Masquerade.
All right.
What?
Twice Fun. Wait, what?
That's what's listed on there. And versus, as we have Camille Twice Fun, Bukulewski from Poland, versus Aaron James from the UK. So
right.
I think we give a look at these lists.
Wait, no. His name is Camille Twice Fun, and then Bukowski. That's his last name. Wait, Twice Fun? Yo, that's crazy.
Wait, what?
I don't even care what the matchup is. He won already.
All right, let's take a look at these decks. So we have Gardevoir Raging Bolt versus regular Raging Bolt.
You were trying to scroll through and you were struggling. I was waiting. I thought I saw Gardevoir Raging Bolt and I was like, wait a minute.
Whoa, hold up. All right. Right. We got some cooking already. Bro, this is why we have Kristen in the corner. So first of all, right. Let's break down this list. We got Gardevoir Raging Bolt. This is a known deck ish. I've heard it once before on Twitter.
Yeah.
But basically, the whole idea here is you're using, you know, Raging Bolt as your attacker, but instead of powering it up with Chillmask, Ogrepan, or Asadas, you just use Gardevoir to just cheat energy back into play every turn. So we have a 4-4-1 or 4-4-2 Gardevoir line. Plus, we still have a Drifloon, a Flutterfane, and a Screamtail. One Hunky Dory, because why not? Also, the Bunny Catch Gallade to find
Search your Sada every turn.
You're gonna find
and two Raging Bolts to attack with. So,
how many Pal Pads?
One Pal Pad.
Four Arvin.
The trolley. Four Arvin. Hey, you're a trolley build. I guess you go like you probably set up like Gardevoir and you can just bench Raging Bolt and start swinging.
But how are we summoning so?
Well, I guess maybe you can just play like a Gardevoir deck, and if you go hit like something, you just blow them up. I don't know.
Could you imagine, like, you're playing against Gardevoir and they go, like, concealed cards away lightning? You're like,
huh? Yeah, the Fluttermane in here, 2-2 Stretcher, the one boss, Impressed Moonlit Hill.
What's the energy count?
Six Psychic, 2 Lightning, 2 Fighting, and 1 Dark.
Okay,
3 Vessel, 3 Buddy Poffin, no Nest Ball. But I honestly guess, you play Trolley. You just go Arvin for, like, you know, you open a roll to go, like, Trolley. Arvin for, like... Yeah, go Trolley for Greninja, Ralts, Raging Bolt, attach, like, and you go Evo, you go attach, I don't know, kind of cooking. So, first of all, shout out to the arts. We have two mismatch of Gardevoir EXs. We have one from Paladin and Fates, one from SVI. Someone hook up our boy Twice Fun. Right, I guess, all I don't right. know, I don't know their gender. Someone hook up Twice Fun. And then on the right, we do have the full art plus the golds Raging Bolt. Nice little variety, some good bling.
So this is
all across
straight,
the board.
Straight Raging Bolt with a Briar. Yeah, straight Raging Bolt.
Briar and Crispin. Ooh, and the Iono. We're cooking a little bit. 3 Nest Ball. All right. 3 Nest Ball, 1 Ultra Ball. All right, all right.
How are you ever fighting Pokemon?
Wait, why are we playing 3 Nest Ball? Wow.
Hey, let them cook. As we say in the business, let them cook.
In the business. That's showbiz, baby.
2 Vessel.
Hey, let them cook. That's all I'm saying. Well, 2 Trekking Shoes. They love their 2-ups. Two Vacuum. That's the spicy tech to me. So definitely didn't want to be Gardevoir. Listen, y'all. The Battle of Raging Bolts. We got the Raging Bolt with their favorite 2-ups. Does have the Vacuum. It's going to come up pretty big if a Raging Bolt Gardevoir ever goes in the Drifloon. Who do you have? Who you got? Which one are you taking?
This is tough, man. I don't know. I guess the faster, more consistent deck is probably going to win here. I mean, because, like...
If this guy prizes Trolley, he leaves, right?
Yeah.
No, they have 3 Bunny Poffin. They're fine.
The guy on the right, they'd go Raging Bolt, and they just start attacking early. And basically, they're saying, hey, if you kill me with Raging Bolt, I'm just going to knock you out back with a Raging Bolt. So, yeah. And then if you Drifloon me, I'm going to vacuum it away because I'm playing 2 vacuums. So maybe in the theoretical match of Raging Bolt Gardevoir versus Raging Bolt with only 2 vessels, maybe Raging Bolt gets there half the time?
Perhaps. I don't know. There's so many hypotheticals. but I think just off of pure... Just all the consistency. I mean, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's tough.
I'm thinking like Gardevoir can just have a single prize board at the start.
Yeah, it can.
Like you just build up a big hand. then you can go through the Gardevoir if you need to. I mean, like, on turn two, Gardevoir countercatcher KO. Like,
it's gonna be Evo. If you don't Evo, you don't win.
Yes.
As the Bolt Gardevoir player. But even yes. if you Evo, after you Evo, you have to find your Gardevoir EX and your Gallade to find your two of Sada.
No, you don't even need Sada. I mean, you can just go Guardi attack. You can go Guardi countercatcher monkey.
Yeah, or you
can go countercatcher?
I mean, go Guardi countercatcher. Yeah, I mean,
it's Scream Tail, their Squawk. Or you go Scream Tail. And it's just over from there.
I don't know.
Don't. Then you drop the Bolt.
No, the deck on the left is not consistent enough. Sorry.
Well, you got Trolley into Evo. No, I see your point, though. I mean, I think totally definitely to be said about just the straightforwardness of Raging Bolt getting off the ground. Maybe there's a little bit of consistency issues with that being a final Pokemon you need. Maybe you have a little harder time that turn one attack. Honestly, on spice factor alone and with the single prize board state, I'm giving a slight edge to Raging Bolt Gardevoir.
I think
this is just for the memes. Who can say?
I think that I think I'm gonna give it to the left twice fun's deck.
There's no way.
It's twice as fun as regular Raging Bolt.
We've had some requests. I'm gonna need you to save it. We're gonna run this match. Save it.
All right, we'll save them down. We'll run this back.
We'll tell you guys next week how this matchup actually went.
All right. Next up, we got EL versus WO. Let's see who we got. EL and WO. We get a lot of, we sort by first name alphabet.
Yeah, well, yeah, so do that, yeah, reverse. Do that, yeah, do that, yeah.
See, we got
Woody.
We have Woody, but it's a senior, so I kind of want to see this 3,282nd list from by Winnie Wong.
Yeah, me
Winnie
too.
Wong.
And then Xavier Mineal.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So from Xavier Mineal, we have a
full French
list.
Put it in English, please.
We have Lugia with, there's got to be promo Archeops, right? And this is
Max, scroll up. You can put it in English.
Promo Lugia. What do you mean I can put it in English? Oh, there you go. Translate. There you go. versus Snorlax.
Oh, unlucky.
When you showed up with Snorlax. Wait, where'd my list go?
We've got three temples. We got three temples, two fans.
Oh, the old classic matchup, Snorlax versus Lugia.
We got three temples, two fans. How many stadiums we got on the left?
One message goes to one jamming.
There's a lot of stadiums.
The two miss here.
That's a lot of stadiums. We got Cape, though. We got Cape. Mimikyu plus Cape, does that do anything?
No, you have Mimikyu.
They're rat.
Yeah, you got rat.
Oh, you got one rat, and they have jamming tower, too.
Well, I mean, Mimikyu just blows everything up anyways. I know this matchup's actually closer now. I mean, when you're playing the three temple and, like, two fan, like, maybe you can... And Giacomo, like... I don't... I mean, this matchup probably comes down to the players more than anything. It's like, how prepped are they in the matchup? And can they make it happen?
Let me see the energies on the left. Everything standard for Jet. Okay,
yeah. We have a... doesn't do the math there. We have 16 energy.
I think I probably got to give it to Lugia.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we can go away from Lugia on this one, sadly.
Yeah, also the Fluttermane, too, is just like another... Actually, I mean, it's probably more of a problem than anything, but... yeah, I mean, again, kind of a matchup that we know of-ish. But again, the three Temple and the Giacomo, I think, makes things close.
Yeah, it makes it close. It's really,
I think it comes down to the matchup prep, honestly, right?
Yeah.
Winnie Wong did end up 3,282nd place, so maybe they weren't too prepared in some of these matchups versus Xavier Mayneal, who showed 1591. So we do know it wasn't Lugia's day, but if you had a Snorlax, you're probably pretty happy as Lugia.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, we do have three different Lugia arts as well.
I like the
That's
promo
a crime.
Full art.
The promo one is sick.
Yeah, I like that one too. Okay.
You cannot see it here, but trust us, it's the promo, and there's the four.
Trust me, bro.
Trust. Yeah. All right, so that's going to do it for this segment. That was fun. We'll have some more next week. We just don't have a lot of time with the Xander interview. We don't want to keep you forever this week.
And but we do it's Raging Bolt, Gardevoir. That is the Crispin Corner deck.
That is the Crispin Corner deck, with later. For sure. Bring it tomorrow, bud. Sleeve it up. All right. So let's jump into the data analysis for the World Championships. So I've been talking about the World Championship data is going on for a while now. I've been gung-ho saying that, like, I think the number is 750. Like, I think that is where you want to be. That's, like, the number that I believe is going to be 125-ish, somewhere around there. And the reason why I get that calculation is because of all the data analysis that I do. So I'm going to run you through the data that I've done. I've got two separate sets of data I want to talk about today. First, I'll talk about the 125 as holistically, and then I even went a little bit further from 75th place down to 400 on the North American leaderboard. This is North American data only. I kind of called that the chopping block, 75th through 400, right? Whatever. Assuming there's 400 people going for it, right? Whatever. So I'm going to go through top 125 first. So out of the top 125, 91 players have now reached their best finish limit, and their average CP across those 91 players is 522, and this is majors only. Does not include locals. We're just going to assume that everybody maxes out at their 260 and not worry about it. There is 25 players that have four finishes, and their average combined is 466 points. And then there is eight players that have three finishes at average of 431. There's nobody that has two in the top 125. And we already talked about in our trivia segment, there's one person that has 350, and that's Christian Solis.
Yeah, but of course, an auto invite's not even counting against the 125.
Yeah, so this does not. This does include the... I think I excluded the auto invites. No, I did, because it's Christian's in there. So this does include the auto invites. I think without it, it's like... There's only eight, I think is what I saw.
Eight auto invites?
I can validate that real quick. Hold on. Seagrove.
Yeah, I mean, okay. It's any North American player who's won a major event. And of course, you've had Henry Chow, who's won two. So,
so I'm 115th with auto invites. And then I move up to 107. So, yeah, like there's eight people that have an auto invite. So those eight people.
Just counting this weekend.
Yeah, it's counting this weekend. Okay. Those eight people are included in that. Yeah, Seagrove's already updated. So, Chow Seagrove. And so again, the number still seems to be around 500 for your majors. The question is, will all top 125 players max out their CP at locals? I think the answer to that's yes. So I think we're going to see a competitive, like the 115 or 100 through, you know, 130. It's going to be right around that 750 number. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that that number is going to hold. You know, we still have, I got rid of my paper that had it, but we still have one more IC. We have Vancouver, we have Atlanta, we have Milwaukee, we have Portland. You have players that are going for their invite going to Mexico. I'm missing maybe one more. Is that five, six tournaments?
I think so.
That's all the ones in North America that I know of. And there's one in America. But,
you know. And then I'll get through the chopping block players. But the average expected value of a finish for a chopping block player is 70 points. That's like the average that they'll get if they get a finish based on the data analysis that I did. So interesting to see, you know, we got 91 players already at five. Now, obviously this is an average. So you got some players that are higher, some players that are lower. So maybe the number can come down to like 480, 450 to 480, which would then, you know, put it somewhere around, what, 450 plus 250 is 700, so maybe it could be as low as 700. But yeah, that's kind of my thought. Wrapping up here, I want to give you my chopping block data. So this is 324 players. I were kind of surveyed, or I looked at their data, from 76th place to 400th. The average count of their finish is 3.4. And the number of players that are at their best finish limit of five is only 60. So that leaves 264 players that have like more open spots, you know, in that chopping block section. And again, I already said the expected value is 70. So you can maybe expect like, you know, across six finishes, across six more majors, maybe half of them get at least one more finish of 70 points, or at least add 70 points to their total. So it's going to get really competitive down the wire here. I still think the number is 700 or above, like if you want to make it to Worlds. So if you're already above that number, if you're above 800, I think you're like completely safe at this point, based off of all my data calculations. So Maddox, congratulations. You had a couple of great tournaments here. You should be safe.
Oh, but it holds. So.
So yeah, I mean, I'm really concerned. Like I mentioned earlier about, you know, not doing well at the last two ICs and kind of hurting me. I'm gonna miss Milwaukee. I'm gonna miss Portland. I'm probably gonna miss NAIC. So, you know, I'm gonna try my hardest for the next two tournaments, prepare really hard, and hopefully we get, you know, a 32 or better to kind of lock up our invite and get to a comfortable point total. But curious your thoughts on the data before we close out.
I think the the one numbers thing, right, that you mentioned is, you know, as you get up in that top 125, which makes sense, is that the players that only have a few finishes that have found themselves there have an extremely high average finish. Instead of an average of player who has only three finishes in the top 125 has like 430 points, which means they're averaging over 130 a finish. So like, which is just like insane performance. So if you're one of those players, right, like keep up what you're doing, fill in those sub finishes and just like secure that spot. And I think like Eric said, you know, that bubble of saying, hey, there's still like, you know, four or five more major events to wrap up this year. And you know, the best bit of finish limit is five. So you can go and pull up with those, you know, big finishes to wrap up the season. Like you can still make a run here late in the season.
I thought it was interesting you included everyone all the way down to like 400, and then you had it like dropped down, but there were five people, or not five people, there's 60 people with five finishes.
There's 60 people like, in that section of players that have,
yeah, with five finishes already. It's kind of crazy ish I guess. Yeah,
I mean, think of players that you get 40 to 60 points per,
yeah,
tournament. You know, I think the average that you want to be is about 100 points per tournament to, like, that's not really safe is where I think it's going to end up.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, that's kind of like where I am. I'd like to see kind of what everyone thinks about the data analysis that I did, so drop a comment below what you think the final point total will be. While you're there, press the subscribe button. We got a lot of cool things coming this year. You know, we already had some awesome stuff happen in Merida. Gonna keep working, keep grinding. Thank you guys for your support. Max and I felt the love. I don't know about you, Max, but I had a lot of people say, hey, like, you know, great job. Keep what you're doing. So, but that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Beach Court Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with our preview of the Vancouver Regional Championships and hopefully have a special guest for you. So stay tuned. Till next time. See ya.
See ya.